Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings Full Year 2014 Financial Results Conference Call. Following a brief overview by FBN Holdings management team, an interactive Q&A session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Bello Machado, Group Chief Executive Officer of FBN Holdings. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me welcome you to this conference call that has been scheduled to present our full year audited financial accounts for the financial year ended December 31st, 2014, for FBN Holdings PLC. In commencing, let me just say fairly quickly that there is a slight amendment to our presentation on page 21, and I ask that participants should get onto the website to be able to see the most recent presentation. Now, to commence our presentation, let me just say that starting with the macroeconomic environment, I think it's appropriate to say that the year 2014 was a very tough year for the Nigerian economy. First, we witnessed decline in the price of oil that impacted government revenues and subsequently also impacting external reserves of the country. As a result, we witnessed subsequent naira devaluation in the process. So from what has happened with respect to oil prices, we are beginning to expect a possible return to a double-digit inflation because we have seen anticipated rise in core and food inflation as they respond to the exchange rate depreciation. Of course, due to oil price decline and as to be expected, IMF has revised downwards GDP growth forecast for Nigeria for 2015 to 4.8%. Let me say that on the capital market side, we have also been witnessing very volatile and indeed very weak equity markets. And this was basically as a result of the uncertainty that surrounded the run-up to elections that actually saw a lot of flight to safety. But happily, though, we are happy to say that the elections have come and gone, and they have been conducted peacefully and successfully. And for the first time in the 16-year democratic history of Nigeria, we are witnessing a handover of power from an incumbent government to an opposition government. So we believe that the political outlook for Nigeria is very stable. Having said this, let me also say that like the broader macroeconomic environment, the regulatory environment has also been challenging during the course of 2014. First, we have witnessed the progressive increase in CRR both on the public sector funds as well as the private sector, which have grown from 12% progressively to 50% and then to 75% on public sector, and for private sector from 12% progressively to 20%. And this, for us as a group, has had the impact of causing about 560 billion to be sitting at the Central Bank of Nigeria and zero interest rate. So in addition to increase in reserve ratio, we have also witnessed the introduction of Treasury Single Account, which is basically taking away collections from federal government agencies away from the banking system into the Central Bank of Nigeria. Thirdly, we have also witnessed the commencement of the implementation of Basel II, which kicked off in October 2014, even though we have also witnessed the postponement, if you will, by the Central Bank of the introduction of the systemically important bank to July 2016. And basically, with the new Basel requirement, institutions that have not complied with the current requirement are required to submit a capital plan by June 2015 and to be able to be in full compliance by end of June 2016. Again, let me say that for the first time in 2 years, we have witnessed the increase in MPR from 12% to 13%. And all this together, we can characterize as a chain of activities that have continued to create a very tight liquidity system. Now, despite this situation in 2014, let me say that as a group, we have been able to report both top line and bottom line numbers that have presented positive growth from the performance of the previous year, starting with our gross earnings that have jumped as a group by over 21%, right working way down to the bottom line profit before taxes that actually increased by 1.6 billion from 91.3 billion to 92.9 billion. And I'm very happy to report that all our individual business lines, from commercial banking to investment banking and asset management to insurance, all contributed positively to the growth of our 2014 numbers. Starting with the commercial banking, let me say that their gross earnings grew by 22%, while PBT grew by about 9% during the course of 2014. And for investment banking, as represented by FBN Capital, their revenues actually jumped from 21.7 billion to 23.7 billion. I bear in mind that this is a business that just as far back as just 2010 was only doing about 2 billion in revenue. So the revenue growth by FBN Capital is appreciable, and so also is the profit before taxes that have grown from 5.3 billion to 6.2 billion in the course of 2014. The insurance business also recorded some remarkable growth, almost doubling profitability from 850 million to about 1.6 billion. So overall, the individual business lines have all positively contributed to the appreciable performance of the group. And I would like to say that even in recognizing our performance as a group in the course of 2014, we have also put in place a number of structures that are designed to position us for future growth. First, on the investment banking side, we have concluded the 100% acquisition of Kakao Discount House, which is supposed to provide FBN Capital an entry into the merchant banking business. By this entry, it will provide the opportunity to be able to drive end-to-end project finance transactions, to also get into the fixed income trading as well as foreign exchange trading in a way that will broaden its product offerings. So we believe the foray into merchant banking is one that will catapult FBN Capital from what it is, a boutique investment banking institution, to a full-fledged merchant banking group. Likewise, on the insurance side, I would like to say that we have also concluded an acquisition of 100% general insurance business. And the whole objective of that acquisition is to ensure that we get into the deeper, broader insurance market, which is 85% of the total market. Over the course of the last many years, we have only been in life, which is just 15% of the market. So just maybe recapitulating our performance as a group, let me say that, number one, looking at total assets, looking at customer deposits, looking at loans and advances, we have made progress in each of these individual areas and also aggregately. As a result, our key ratios have also been impressive. Our return on average equity on a pre-tax basis was 18.7%, while on a post-tax basis stands at 16.7%. Of course, we do acknowledge that the cost to income ratio actually jumped from 62.7% to 66.7%, but this is substantially due to increase in regulatory costs. AMCON levy actually increased by about 23%, jumping to 17 billion, while NDIC premium grew by 17% to about 13 billion. So regulatory costs alone jumped to 30 billion. Also related is the fact that on the cash reserve ratio, we have 560 billion sitting in CBN earning zero interest rate. That has actually shaved over 64 billion in revenues for the group. So these are some of the factors that have actually impacted on cost-to-income ratio. And as we get into the details of the discussion, I guess other issues can also be highlighted. But overall, our capital adequacy ratio based on Basel II stands at 16.7%, which we consider a healthy number, well above the regulatory minimum of 15%. Now, having given you some of the financial indices of our performance over the last 1 year, 2014, let me just say that in concluding this initial point of the presentation, that the capital adequacy ratio that stands at 16.7%, if it had been calculated on a Basel I basis, would have stood at 21.5%. So it is number one, the migration to Basel II that has actually brought the cash to that position. But we have in place a very robust, very deliberate, and very conscious capital management program that is designed to ensure that we maintain healthy capital adequacy ratio going forward. So in summary, this is what our financial numbers look like for 2014. And at this point, I would like to invite the Chief Financial Officer of our commercial bank, First Bank Nigeria Limited, Ms. Shola Adetuntam, to take you through some of the big issues that are confronting the banking industry during the course of 2014 and presently. Thank you.
Thank you, Group CEO. We said that it's very important that the key variables impacting our business and impacting the industry at large, that those issues are discussed, and that way we are able to manage or better educate the people on the call. So there are four key issues that we think is worthy that management put on the table, and we discuss what the issues are and our own strategic responses to those issues. So I start with capital. A number of questions that come in around whether we'll be going to the market to issue incremental equity, and our plan in the short run is that we do not believe that this is the right time for the bank or for the institution to issue additional equity at this point in time in the market. We think the low market liquidity and the depressed valuation is a disincentive for going to the market at this point in time. So the question is, if we are not going to be issuing additional equity in the market, how do we intend to generate adequate and sufficient capital to run the business? As we have demonstrated in the 2014 audited financial statement, the primary approach to managing capital for us is to improve and enhance our retention rate. Our plan, which is evident in what has been done in 2014, is that we increase the retention rate of the profits within the institution. In addition to that, and to also make the retention process itself to be more efficient, starting from this current financial year, we'll be auditing the interim financial statement of the commercial banking group at 6 months to ensure that the earnings that we made between January and end of June are capitalized and are available to support the business for the second half of the year. In addition to that, the group CEO alluded to the fact that we've now implemented what we regarded as an efficient capital and balance sheet management policy. So going forward, starting from 2014, we now have a key focus on ensuring appropriate pricing of all our risk assets in line with the capital consumption, especially when you look at off-balance sheet transactions. So if we project forward, based on how we expect 2015 2015 to pan out, we believe we'll have the capacity to generate sufficient internal capital to support the growth of the business during the course of 2015, and to also put us in very good position to commence 2016. The second key issue that is impacting the industry is the decline in the oil price. And given the fact that we as a first bank, we do have a decent exposure in terms of the industry exposure to the oil and gas industry. As it relates to our oil and gas portfolio, we think it's important to highlight what we consider as the mitigating factors. First and foremost is the fact that in going into most of those transactions, we actually went through very rigorous credit appraisal process. Most of the base case scenario that formed the basis of approving the credit were quite conservative. Some of the oil and gas transactions, especially in the upstream oil and gas transactions, we do have hedge contracts in place to provide secondary protection. We are, and given where the market is now, we have also enhanced the monitoring process around those transactions such that we are in the position to proactively manage and interface with all the exposures. The exposures to the downstream subsector are essentially short-term self-liquidating trade finance transactions, mainly to major players in the market who are able to, who have very strong outlets and very strong operating cash flow. For the upstream transaction, our view really is that the fundamentals of those transactions are quite strong, and that the worst case scenario there is there may be need to extend slightly the tenor of those facilities to align with the crude oil reset. The other key matter that we want to discuss proactively is the impact of the devaluation of the currency on the performance of the institution. The first point here that is worthy to be highlighted is the fact that most of our foreign currency loans are backed up by foreign currency cash flows, thereby providing natural hedge. For some of them, we do have a forward contract in place to moderate foreign currency risk exposure. And for the exposure that we do have to the manufacturing and the general commerce sector, generally, these exposures are mainly to the very large top-end players who have capacity to also manage the currency risks that are inherent in their transactions, and they are able to pass through a significant chunk of this devaluation cost onto their own customers. As a matter of deliberate corporate policy, during the course of 2015, we do have a strategic target to continue to wind down, and that actually relates to the prior point, our oil and gas exposure. The last was on the list of the key issues we want to put on the table relates to the efficiency. Our group CEO already highlighted the fact that a chunk of the increase that we had in our expenses in 2014, a part of that is due to increase in regulatory costs, and the fact that we had significant, and we still do have that balance, significant balance with the Central Bank of Nigeria heading zero, where the opportunity cost of that, the balance in Central Bank is about 64, 65 billion. If you adjust for that, our cost-to-income ratio would have been better. But even at that, what are we doing going forward to enhance the efficiency of the institution? One, we started and we continue to rationalize unprofitable branches to ensure that while minimizing the growth of brick and mortar as a customer service delivery channel going forward too. We are working very hard to also migrate many of our customers as possible onto alternative channel, so thereby reducing the need to grow brick and mortar branch network going forward. We are currently restructuring our procurement function and also streamlining all the related processes and procedure to also ensure that there's value for money in all that we procure as an institution. We will continue to push on our centralizing shared services initiative that enables us to centralize as much as possible a number of services, operational functions that are currently domiciled at all our branches. The first shared services thing is taking off, and we do have a well-structured plan to migrate as many function as possible onto that. The other key thing that we are doing is we are realigning the manpower in the institution, ensuring that more resources, rotating more resources from the middle and back office onto the front office, and we are also currently optimizing our IT solutions, especially at the branches and also at the head office, to ensure that processes are made more efficient. And ultimately, the game plan is to free up more headcount to move from middle and back office onto the front office. So that essentially are the key four key issues that we think are impacting are the big things coming out from the feedback. I would just quickly spend another 3 minutes to take you through the next slide, where we basically discuss the outlook for the business, essentially structured around how do we generate sufficient revenue going forward. Key thing there to highlight is the fact that we've embarked on a portfolio rebalancing, where we're essentially allocating more resources to the commercial banking and the retail end of our business. We know retail end on paper may have higher loss norms, but these are an area where we develop the right tools, skill sets, and we do have the right experience, and we do not expect that the loss norm will be outside of what we currently enjoy, what we are currently experiencing. We are also embarking on appropriate repricing of all our asset portfolio, which we think is also quite significant. The group CEO has already discussed the potential impact of Kakawa Discount House acquisition and that of Oasis on our business. In addition to that, we are currently integrating more closely our international subsidiaries in Congo and in West Africa, and we are currently at the value realization phase. We expect the contribution from those international subsidiaries to continue to grow going into the future. So, essentially, that's the additional thing I want to mention. We've covered the issue, covered the discussion around plan, capital plan, and around the cost strategy.
Okay. Just in concluding, before we get into the question and answer session, let me say that given the current pricing of FBN Holdings on the Nigerian Stock Exchange, we are presently trading at about 0.6 times book value and at about 2.9 times PE ratio. Partly responsible for this is because the large domestic institutional investor base, the pension fund administrators, are not able to get into our stock because of the old pension law of 2004 that precludes companies that have less than 5 years trading records from having PFAs invest in their shares. Unfortunately, we were categorized as holding companies as being companies under 5 years of operation. Happily, the Pension Reform Act has been amended. A new law has been passed, which is Pension Reform Act 2014, which has removed that restriction. In addition, the Pension Commission has also issued a draft exposure draft investment guidelines to the marketplace for investors to basically evaluate the details of the new investment guidelines before they are finalized. These comments have already been passed back to the National Pension Commission, and we believe that any moment now, the final investment guidelines will be released, which will remove the impediment of pension fund administrators, the huge domestic institutional investor base in Nigeria, from investing in financial holding companies. We believe that once this is done, it will bring the share price of FBN Holdings and possibly other holding companies closer to their intrinsic value. We thought this is valuable information that we need to pass on to the market and to bring to attention of our investors. On this note, we'll now move to the question and answer session, and we'll be happy to invite questions from you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure the mute function on your phone is switched off to allow the signal to reach our system. If you find your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for a moment to allow everyone to signal. As an additional reminder, to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, ensure the mute function on your phone is switched off to allow the signal to reach our system. We will now take our first question from Lanra Buluro from Primerica Africa. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. just a few questions on your exposure to certain companies. I wanted to know any updates on London Mining. Also, exposure to Anchorage, particularly Radisson Blu. It's been shut down for a while, and we're trying to see if there's a service in the loan, and what kind of exposure do you guys have to them. And also, update on Seawolf. I know it's under receivership and impacts on the bank long term. That's it for now, and I'll get back on the queue. Thank you.
Chief Risk Officer, Jojo Odubola.
Okay. Thank you very much for your questions. I will address your three questions. You are asking questions about London Mining, which is on the books of our UK subsidiary, Anchorage, and then Seawolf. If you look at page 23 of the presentation, we had actually provided an update on London Mining. Essentially, the asset has been sold, and the new owners of these assets are on board. We're not taking any impairment charge because the loan is performing right now. On Anchorage, as you know, Anchorage is part of the Honeywell Group, and also the loan is performing because the Honeywell Group is a diversified company, the diversified group, and they have cash flows from all the other businesses, Honeywell Flour, Honeywell Oil and Gas, and so on, to be able to service their obligations as they come due. We're also aware that the hotel is closing for renovation, which is ongoing, and we're very confident that they will reopen. But in the meantime, the account is fully performing. As to Seawolf, as you recall, Seawolf had been sold to Amcon a couple of years ago. So as we speak, we don't have any direct exposure to Seawolf. However, there is a bond that Amcon is going to take over maybe within the next 12 weeks. I don't know whether I've been able to answer all your questions.
I think the head of finance will also...
Yeah, I thought that was an equity stake in Seawolf also. What's the impact on that?
All right. Additionally, during restructuring, Seawolf, the equity investment in Seawolf was taken over by FBN Holdings PLC to entrench that and ensure we were able to do the business going forward. So for Seawolf equity in FBN Holdings PLC, when Amcon appointed a reserve manager, the group has taken a view to make a full provision. So if you check the financial statement, you will see that in 2013, we provided $2.375 billion, and in 2014, we made a provision of $7.781 billion. Then we have made full provision for CWU in the account.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Josh Levin from Citibank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you and good afternoon. If the price of oil stays in the mid-50s, when would you expect NPLs to peak, and how long do you think it would work to sort of normalize and get through the bad credits and get back to a normalized NPL ratio?
Sorry, can you take your question again?
If the price of oil stays in the mid-$50 range where it is now, when would you expect your NPLs to peak? And then how long do you think it would take to work through the bad credits so that your NPLs come back to a more normal level?
Okay. So answer your question. We all know the impact of the reduced price of oil is not just on the risk asset portfolio. We also know that government revenues have been depressed at all levels because of the price of oil. So there are impacts on exposure to state government and also impact on exposure to employees of state government. But that's on one part. Let me go back to the upstream sector where the impact is more direct. The fact is we have looked at our portfolio of upstream exposure, and according to our stress test, oil prices being at about $50 a barrel is actually not too detrimental. We have stress tested our portfolio at oil prices of about between 30 and 40, and we see not really NPL, but possibility of tenor elongation. And we're also assuming that the oil companies don't do anything. We are aware that some of them are reducing CAPEX, they are reducing OPEX, they are bringing additional money from other sources to reduce the exposure. So, oil prices being at about $50 a barrel, really don't expect too much impact on NPL, especially for the upstream sector. If you look at our portfolio, the NPL for the upstream sector is currently nil. We really don't expect that there will be growth in NPL. However, like I said, there are other sectors of the economy where the oil price via reduced government expense is going to bite. We're experiencing delays in payment of salaries, which is affecting our consumer payroll loans. We have had to extend the tenor of exposure to state government, and we see all this exposure being paid down. So we really don't expect that there will be significant increase in NPL going forward, given the kind of, given the structure of the loan that we have in place, and for the upstream, given the value of the assets that we finance and so on and so forth.
So just to be clear, so I understand, your NPL ratio, you do not, for the whole loan book, you do not think the NPL ratio will go up much from here?
No, well, I'm saying that we don't see the NPL ratio going up significantly. As at the end of 2014, our NPL ratio was about 2.9. In 2015, we are expecting it to be anything below between 3% and 5%. So, yeah, will probably be some increase in NPL based on all the things I've said, but not going to be significantly over 2014 numbers.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Soji Saul Ankev from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for this conference call. I have a few questions. My first question is on OPEX. There's a particular line in there that's called operating and other losses. Can you kindly tell us what this is? I think the value is about 18.5 billion naira. My second question is on capital. So it's good to hear your plans around capital near term. However, what I want to understand from you is, do you think you need a tier one raise, and what could potentially be a trigger of a tier one capital raise? My third question is, so from my side, I've been getting quite a lot of questions on your exposure to a company called Atlantic Energy. Can you kindly use this medium to clarify what the size is, what the problem this company has had over the past 12 months, and what exactly is First Bank's collateral, or should I say fallback option, on this particular loan? It's raised so many questions over the last 3 to 6 months. Thank you.
So the Chief Financial Officer will pick the issue on OPEX
and capital.
And capital.
Thank you. The line that you referred to, other operating losses, is essentially the key component there. There were a number of provisions that we had, we considered during the course of the year, and we felt it was important that we bite the bullet. So I give you a good example. One of them relates to the period, the time in the past when the Pension Act has become effective for the institutions to make the to make the act itself to be functional were not yet in place. So during that period, for example, we made deductions from staff salary, we contributed the employer's own contribution and remitted when those organs of the pension pension industry became effective. However, PENCOM has been in discussion with us during the course of 2013-2014 to say that for the period during which those institutions have not been established and we haven't remitted that there's an interest that is due to our staff during that period, for example, and in addition to that, they also slammed penalty on that. So we've settled that, and that's the key component of that particular balance. We also had the benefit of having a new person taking a look at our general ledgers and a number of open positions. And so we've had to also make provisions for some legacy balances that existed in our books. The third key component of that relates to the provision that we've made relating to certain events for which we are not able to currently make a disclosure, as that might injure the position of the bank. So, but essentially, most of those transactions, they are non-recurring, so we do not expect them to reoccur. On capital, our view is that for as long as the institution remains profitable, which we are, and given the support that we have received from our shareholders to increase the earnings retention rate, we think we will have sufficient capital to continue to drive the growth of the institution, at least in the short to medium term. Our forward-looking analysis suggests that even for the 16% systemically important bank additional surcharge of 1%, we are comfortable that come 1st of July 2016, this bank will be in a position to meet that 16% requirement and will still have enough headroom to continue to trade.
Piero, would you like to check?
Okay, I would like to provide information on Atlantic Energy. We financed the OPEX and CAPEX requirements for the drilling of 4 oil wells with proven reserves under a strategic alliance agreement that Atlantic Energy had with NPDC, that's Nigerian Petroleum Development Company. The exposure is currently about 75 billion, which is comparable to the size of the for average reserve-based lending. Now, how are we secured? We are secured by a security trust deed over the assets of the company, including the crude oil entitlements under the strategic alliance agreement. And the value of the collateral is several times the exposure, about maybe 5 or 6 times our exposure. And the bank also has a charge on all the collections accounts which were held the crude proceeds. Now, in the recent past, there have been a suspension of crude lifting entitlement as a result of the consolidation issue. However, the company has concluded successfully a reconciliation with MPDC, and we expect crude lifting to start happening from between May and June, subject to Atlantic Energy meeting some terms and conditions, which they are on the verge of meeting. We expect that by the time crude oil lifting commences, this company will be able to generate funds to continue.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by as we are experiencing a momentary interruption in today's conference. Thank you for your patience, and please continue to hold. Back into the private conference. If you can just say a few more words for me just to make sure the sound is good.
A few more words to make sure the sound is good.
Perfect. The sound sounds good to me there at the moment. Angela, are you happy enough with that? Your line is open again if you wish to respond.
Yes, it's fine for us. We can just start.
Perfect. So, Angela, I will mute your line again. I will open up the line, and I will just say, please go ahead. That would be your cue to recontinue with the conference. Please go ahead.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes,
you were still talking about Atlantic.
Yes, I was talking about Atlantic Energy. And like I said, the reconciliation process with MPDC is complete. And like I said, the company is about to commence lifting, probably between May and June. And we expect this company to come back. We have no reason to classify this exposure as non-performing, since there's still moratorium on principal repayment, and interest repayment is being met through accumulated funds in the debt service reserve account. The owners are also going to inject additional equity to reduce this loan exposure. So essentially, the loan is still performing, still meeting all its obligations. The only problem was that the crude oil lifting was suspended and this is about to be lifted. Thank you.
Great. I just have a few follow-up questions for the CFO. I struggle to get your explanations on the operating losses. So I understand there's an angle which you cannot talk about. That's fine. But to better understand the first segment, you said, did you essentially say PENCOM fines on pension payments you didn't make in the past is responsible for the first explanation? And the second one, you said something about major balances on something legacy. You can just clarify what you're talking about. I really don't understand what you're explaining. Sorry.
Okay.
Thanks.
Let me go over that again. What I said was that there was a point in time when the PFAs and the PFC haven't been fully set up. Deductions were made both for the employees and employers, and when those institutions were set up, we remitted. However, National Pension Commission came back and said, for that period, we should have paid interest on those balances, and so we have to go back to that period, and this was computed on a compounding interest basis, and they also levy some penalty. So that is the first part that I mentioned. The second part that I also mentioned that there are some legacy balances on our general ledger for which we've been reviewing, and we took a decision to say take a provision on those loans, continue to do those reviews. You could write them back if you're able to resolve them. Some of them dating back to some years back. So that was the second example that I gave. And then the third one was the one that you rightly highlighted.
All right, great. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Tolu Alumantmusu from Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Great. Good afternoon, and thank you for today's call. I just have a few follow-up questions from what you said. First off, on the CBN amount, the $550 billion, is there any chance that you think the CBN could consider paying something nominal on that, or is that not something that's even been discussed? Second point on your NPL guidance, you've said between 3 and 5%. It's a relatively wide range. I was just wondering whether you could give maybe more specific guidance on where you could fall in that range. Third point, you mentioned that there's been some maturity extensions in the upstream oil and gas sector. Can you give us some idea of the size of those exposures, please, so that we get an idea of what's being considered restructured or renegotiated loans? And lastly, on your funding, given the increase in reserve requirements that you talked about extensively, have you considered other sources of senior funding like the dollar bond market, or do you think that that market is primarily for subordinated capital? Thank you.
I will take the question on CRR. The reality is that the best you could do with the central bank is moral suasion. A number of position papers have been discussed with them, both across all levels. The key proposals are, one, get them to pay some level of interest on the balances to them, and or allow us to use that balance should count as a part of our liquidity asset portfolio. In reality, as of today, there hasn't been a favorable response from the central bank, but I'm also aware that collectively, as an industry, we are pushing. We are in the forefront of this because we are the hardest hit given the quantum of our own CRR portfolio. My expectation is in the fullness of time, they will have to take a look at it because these have sucked significant liquidity out of the market.
The dollar bond.
On the dollar bond, currently we are not looking at any other funding sources. We still continue to. We think that market is still open to us. Number one, and then we also do have significant dollar liquidity coming in through our normal business. So we are quite comfortable with where we are as far as USD financing is today.
Theory, you have two questions.
Okay. Yeah, there are two questions. The first one relates to the NPL guidance, which you commented as being too wide. And I think this demonstrates the volatility that we expect in 2015. When answering one of the first set of questions, I mentioned the fact that we expect significant volatility in the industry, not only because of reduced crude oil prices, which also has affected government revenues with impact on ability of state government to service their obligations, but also on the impact of devaluation, which we expect to affect general traders and a lot of other companies in the country. I mean, Nigerian being imports, we love imports. So the wide range actually reflects the kind of volatility that we expect to see. And we would still like to keep the guidance at between 3 and 5%, although we'll work towards maybe the midpoint. But we'll like to retain the guidance at between 3 and 5%. On the upstream exposure and what part of it we expect to restructure, we are looking at about 10%. We have reached out to our customers in this sector, and a couple of them have said that there will be no need to restructure or elongate their loans because they are doing some other things. They are ramping up production, they are reducing OPEX, they are suspending CAPEX, and so on and so forth. But we expect that some of them will eventually come back to us, and we expect that no more than 10% of the upstream exposure, which in December stood at 276 billion, will be restructured. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. And just one very final question, if I may. You mentioned that you would increase retention, capital retention going forward. What does that mean for your sort of longer-term dividend policy? I mean, I understand you don't want to raise capital, but is the dividend payout something that you might change just to you know, improve the capital ratios?
During the course of 2014, we've already, I mean, if you reviewed our 2014 financial statements, you will observe that we've already made that particular change where we've increased our retention significantly and we've reduced our payout. We would continue to evaluate our position as we journey along. For 2015, for example, we are about to commend the audit of our interim financial for 6 months. That's what is scheduled. And our plan is that we will capitalize whatever has been made in the first 6 months of the year and see where that gets us to. Overall, what we think is that in the short term, the retention will have to keep maintain high retention, and we'll see where that is. But in the, like I said, we do not have any short-term plan to go to the capital market to raise equity.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Dabak Tavasoli from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you very much for the presentation. I just have a couple of follow-up questions on your U.S. dollar liquidity. You said that you expect this to continue to be funded by your current operations. Do you expect the sort of oil price scenario, Naira scenario, to affect that over the next, say, 12 to 18 months? Can you also please comment on your FX open positions, if you have any? Thank you very much.
Okay. So the pleasure, I'll take this.
Okay, so answer your question on FX liquidity. If anything, because of the potential or the devaluation of the currency, what we did see was some degree of increase in domestic holdings of foreign currency. So in many ways, that's been liquidity supportive towards the industry. We don't expect that to naturally change, because one of the key drivers for the growth in our foreign currency liquidity has been tied to the associated lending into the upstream sector, because we naturally receive the crude oil proceeds from that, so it generally is relatively sticky and stable, and we don't expect that to change in the near term. Your second question was on the FX open position limit. Well, clearly the central bank now has instituted a new rule around that, and certainly what that implies is we will manage down to within those levels. So the aggregate balance sheet position will tend to reduce. so that will clearly happen in line with what the central bank has defined.
Do you have a figure for? Thank you very much. Do you have a current figure on that?
Sorry?
Do you have a current figure on your open FX position as of end of 2014?
Well, I think I don't have that right here, but you can give us, we'll give that to you as a follow on.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. We can now take our next question from Lucy Obike from Stabic IBTC Pensions. Go ahead, your line is open.
Hello, good afternoon, and thanks for the presentation. I have a few questions. For the clarifications. First of all, I appreciate clarification of how much of your loan growth was actually driven by currency devaluation. That's one. I also like to know how many of these unprofitable branches you were able to successfully shut down in 2014, because you mentioned it as one of your plans for managing OPEX in 2015. So how much success do you record in 2014 in terms of shutting down these branches? I also want to understand the reason behind the 54% increase in your impairment charges in Q4. So if you could break down these charges, the new ones that caused this kind of spike. Then I also appreciate an explanation in terms of the 100% increase in your non-taxable income that led to the drop in your effective tax rate from 23% to 11%. Should give explanations to that so I can understand if the trend is going to repeat this year. Thank you.
Yeah, will you take the loan growth? Okay, I'll take the question on the loan growth and impairment charges. If you look at page 19 of our presentation, we actually mentioned it there. For SBN Holdings, loan growth was 22.5%. In financial year 2014. But if we adjust for the impact of devaluation, real loan growth was 17.8%. So the impact of devaluation is actually quite significant. On the growth in impairment charges, this was mostly from legacy loans, which are taking longer than we anticipated to resolve. We have to be proactive to take this provisioning. We are confident that some of this provisioning will be reversed during the course of 2015. Thank you.
Okay. CFO? On the unprofitable branches.
I don't really have the number on the number of branches that we have shut down. But what is the key takeaway would be, one, we indeed successfully shut down a couple of branches. That's number one. We also currently do have approval to shut down another batch of branches. But after receiving the central bank approval, we go through some internal process of shutting down. So that is what we are currently going through now. The third key point I want to highlight on that is that we are also currently evaluating the outcome of some of the remedial processes that we put in place for some of those branches, and we're combing through again to identify another round of branches that may fall into that category. So it's something that's right on the front burner of management. Regarding your question on effective tax rate, there are two key components to that. We have increase in tax assessed income, and we also have, but the key element of it is more around utilization of brought forward capital allowance. In prior year, one of the reasons why our effective tax rate was relatively high was the fact that the dividend paid was higher than acceptable profit. And under the tax law, the taxman would pick the higher of the two bases. Now that the dividend payment is much lower, we expect, even though we don't expect effective tax rate to be that low going forward, but we also don't expect it to be as high as it was in prior years. I hope that helped you.
Yeah, that was helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Ksenia Mishankina from UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for the presentation. I have several questions. Could you please comment on the impact of Naira depreciation since the start of the year and how it will impact your first quarter results? And have you done any sensitivity analysis? That would also be helpful. Could you also please comment on total capital adequacy ratio forecast under Basel II for full year 15? And also, could you please just repeat the impact of Naira depreciation on your loan growth? What was the loan growth for full year 14, excluding the impact of Naira depreciation? I just couldn't hear it very well. Thank you.
I think Sierra is asking on the percentage.
Okay.
The percentage real growth, real loan growth.
Page 19. Okay. If you go to page 19 of the presentation, the numbers are there, essentially. Okay. The loan growth for the year was 22.5. That includes Naira devaluation. If you strip out the impact of devaluation, the loan book grew at 17.8%. So the impact of devaluation was accounted for like 8.4% of the growth. Thank you.
Regarding your question on capital adequacy ratio forecast for 2015, our starting point is where we are at the beginning of this year, which is 16.7 for the commercial banking group. Our expectation, if we implement our plan, which is capitalized earnings, mid-media, and also looking at the forecast for the full year, we believe we should be ending the year at about 17% capital adequacy. Hello?
Hi, yes, sorry. And so, thank you very much. And could you please also impact on Naira depreciation since the start of the year, how it will impact your first quarter results, and have you done any sensitivity analysis? Thanks.
First quarter Q1 results.
I mean, if you look, our quarter one result is currently being finalized. The impact is not significant on our position, and the impact is not significant.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Gloria Fadi from CSL Stockbrokers. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, hello, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my question. Most of my questions have been answered, but just a few clarifications. First, on your deposit growth, if we exclude the impact of FX translation, will I be right to say that there was a decline in deposit growth year on year? And if that is the case, is it still as a result of your divestment of public sector deposits? And also, if you look at your classification of NPLs by sector, information and communication seems to have grown quite significantly and currently represents the highest percentage. Can you just explain the reason for that? And then finally, we saw significant FX trading gains in your full year 2014 numbers. Should we expect to see some of those trading gains in at least in your Q1 and Q2 results? Thank you.
Okay, let me start by responding to your last question first. You see some degree of FX exchange and trading income in our Q1 result, and most probably also in our Q2 result, because we're in a net long position, at least as of now. What you will not see is that quantum that you that we saw in quarter four, because that was like a one-off significant jump, and there was extreme volatility that hit our treasury business during that period. But given the outlook for the Naira, we still expect some degree of sell, and given the fact that we are still long in today, so we expect some FX gain, both exchange and then trading income. On deposits, the reality is, given the state of the current regulatory stance as far as CRR is concerned today, we're actually not very aggressive with public sector deposits, which invariably means that you will be competing for the private sector deposits going forward, and that is where the expected growth in deposits is, in terms of the guidance that we have given, is less than 10% going forward. And a part of that 10%, we've also factored in the expected impact of devaluation on our foreign currency deposits.
Okay, MPL. Sorry, there was a question on the MPL for the information and the communication sector. Mm-hmm. Essentially, three names make up the MPL for this sector. All the three names are legacy names that we're trying to work down. One of them is, and the biggest of them, maybe like 40% of the entire one, is actually quite well secured, and we hope to be able to resolve the issue of this account this year. There are other two names where we are more or less taking full provision, so we don't expect a recurrence in 2015. But essentially, we have three names there. It's not like a systemic issue in that particular sector.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, thank you. But on deposit growth, I asked if I could assume that there was a decline. Was there an actual decline? Because you reported 3.8% growth.
No. If you adjust for the impact of devaluation, we see up growth. I don't have the number readily available, but
okay.
We see up. We reported growth. 2.7,
okay.
Actually. 2.7% of the 3.8 is actually the natural growth. Where the devaluation,
okay.
The impact of is the difference between the two numbers.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. We will take our next question from Xiu Gao from Wellington Management. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, so can you explain a little bit to me the different, so the oil price, lower oil price, how does it impact differently the upstream, downstream, and service loans? So are you seeing different effects?
Sorry, can you take that again? The impact of oil price?
Yeah, so because you have exposure to upstream, downstream, and service sector. So the lower oil price, how are you seeing it impact these three subsegments differently?
Okay. For the upstream sector, which is about 15% of our portfolio, we have a few number of accounts in the upstream sector, and like I mentioned during the presentation, we are monitoring this very, very closely. Many of them have the opportunity to restructure, to elongate the tenor of the loan, but they have not chosen to. In fact, some of them have told us that they don't need to restructure, given all the other things that they are doing. Essentially, we have very good assets there, and worst-case scenario, you have tenor elongation. So we don't expect that there will be impaired assets in upstream. In downstream, essentially, we are focusing on the very big names. With the wherewithal to weather any negative impact. So we really don't expect too much of deterioration. The NPL that we have in downstream sector
are actually all legacy accounts. There are no current troubled accounts. The oil services is quite different because this is where we have the number of the retail customers servicing OIP. The NPL ratio for that segment is higher than the other two segments. In fact, it's about 4.9% relative to downstream, which is 2.1%, and upstream, which is currently 0%. What are we doing to ensure that NPL remains within acceptable standards? We are reviewing our product program for playing in this sector, especially for the retail segment. We are introducing tightening conditions. We are reducing limits. We are doing a lot of things to ensure that we keep the NPL ratio for this sector reasonable. But this is the sector we expect that there will be some volatility. Thank you.
Thank you. And just a follow-up on the effective tax rate. So I understood that it was driven by tax-exempt income, which are probably from secured government bonds, and the other part is dividend tax. So I see your guidance that it's going up from 11% to 20% for 2015. Can you just explain a little bit again, like why there is a big jump? I don't think I fully understood.
What we were saying is that in 2014, we do have significant unutilized capital allowance, and that enables us to achieve that very low effective tax rate. Having used that big chunk, we do not expect that significant capital allowance to reoccur, given again we've spoken earlier on today about how we're trying to be more efficient from a balance sheet perspective, which suggests clearly that fixed asset acquisition would be at a minimal level. So if you do that, and so there are three variables: capital allowance brought forward that we've not used before that we used last year, there is a tax exempt income, and then there is the fact that the relationship between your dividend, acceptable profit based on dividend, and the one based on your performance. If capital allowance disappears from the equation, which is what is going to happen going forward, then you expect that your effective tax rate would go up. So we will not go back to where we were prior to this year, but this year's very low effective tax rate is not going to be repeated.
Great. Thank you very much. That's it.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Brian Mugabe from Emara. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Good evening, gentlemen. Just two quick questions. Regarding the SME portfolio, you've indicated that there was some strain there. Are you still expecting to grow that book at the same levels as you had always budgeted to? Or should we expect to see some slowdown? Although, you know, you mentioned you are looking for higher yields, but there did seem to be some NPL strains on that. And then the second question is regarding COT. With 2016 looming, are there any discussions with the authorities that indicate they might relent on that glide path to zero, or should we expect that that's likely that it is going to go to zero next year? Thank you.
Okay. On your first question about the SME portfolio, we are experiencing some strains there, but we have done our reviews and we know the cost of this strain. For some of those, what you have done for is also to, there are some product programs that are devoted to the SME portfolio. And we know what is working and what is not working. So some of these product programs we have put on liquidation basis, but we also see opportunities in other areas that we can explore without necessarily incurring big losses. But you must also remember that for SMEs, pricing is very high. So your risk-reward dynamic is actually quite attractive. So we will continue to grow in FX, but on a very measured basis and without taking significant risk. Thank you.
In response to your question around COT, the first key point to highlight there is the fact that the banker's tariff is up for review, and all the banks, I think there is consensus among banks, all of us would like to keep and cap COT at the current level. Representations have been made to the central bank at the highest level. We believe that the management of central bank is sympathetic to this particular approach and request, but it's an ongoing thing, and that process is still ongoing, and we're all just hopeful that this will be sustained, because we've made sufficient representation that COT is key to the bank, given the significant investment that we've all made in infrastructure, given the state of infrastructure in the country. So, fingers crossed, but that's our expectation that it should be capped at least two naira per meal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Ronak Gadia from Experts Limited. Please go ahead, your line is open. Hello, caller, your line is open. Please go ahead.
Sorry about that. My questions are really just an extension of what a lot of what has been asked already. Firstly, can you just clarify the capital adequacy ratio that the central bank looks at? Your capital adequacy ratio at the group level is above the minimum at 16.7%, but at the bank level you're below at about 15.6. And then just regarding that, I understand you don't have any plans to raise capital this year, but what base case assumption are you using for the Naira this year? Because a significant chunk of your portfolio is FX denominated, and if we do see a significant devaluation in the Naira this year as we did last year, then your loan growth could actually be a lot stronger than what you're currently forecasting, which puts additional pressure to your capital, which may force you to the market earlier than you're expecting. And my final question is to do with your operating expenses. I guess you've thoroughly explained why we saw strong cost growth in 2014, and you are indicating that you're putting in place measures that should sort of reduce that going forward. But my question is, how should we be looking at the execution of that? I mean, management have been promising over the last 4 or 5 years that they are implementing reduction in costs. However, within that period, we've seen your operating expenses actually double. So how credible are your cost-cutting expense plans? Thank you.
Okay. Let me start by responding to the question on capital adequacy. The central bank's primary focus is to look at the bank's capital adequacy ratio, although they also do look at the composite capital adequacy ratio, but the primary focus is on the bank's capital adequacy ratio. Our capital adequacy ratio as at the end of December 2014 was 15.8, which was above the minimum that is required by the central bank, which currently stands at 15. The 16% Basel II capital adequacy ratio will kick in on 1st of July 2016. That's number two. The third point that is worthy that we should highlight during this call is the fact that the central bank, having realized that the timeline given to the industry to cut over and be compliant to the Basel II capital accord rules was short. The group CEO mentioned it in his opening remarks that there's a new circular that they've released that allows even banks that are not compliant with the 15% minimum requirement. They've been given a 1-year window between now and June next year to be compliant. However, we are compliant. And I mentioned during the course of the question and answer that our analysis and forward-looking analysis suggests strongly to us all things being equal, that we will be above the minimum 16% capital adequacy ratio by 1st of July 2016. Now, regarding your question on the impact of devaluation on capital adequacy ratio, we have factored it in before we made that assertion, and we've taken a view that the upper limit of the devaluation that may occur between now and year-end is probably something in the region of 20 to 25%. We have factored that into our forward-looking analysis, and we are still comfortable that we will end up with sufficient capital to meet the minimum regulatory requirements. I hope that's helpful. The other issue on OPEC, again, you also have to look at the mix of our operating expenses and where the largest growth are coming from. The group CEO highlighted the fact that we've seen significant growth on regulatory-related expenses. And honestly, there isn't much that anyone could do about that. Part of the growth in expenses that we are also seeing also has to do with some of the strategic initiatives that we've embarked upon. However, going forward...
Sorry, I mean, just to take you on that, I mean, there are similar-sized banks to yours who also have the same increase in regulatory expenses. But when I look at their increase in operating expenses, you know, their operating expenses have increased by roughly 40 to 50%, not by 100% like your increase. So it's really, you know, difficult to understand or, you know, acknowledge, you know, where this cost efficiencies may come from. Going back to your point on devaluation, if you are estimating a 20 to 25% devaluation and you're estimating loan growth of only 5%, does that mean in real terms you're actually winding down some of your loans to get an overall loan growth of about 5%? And just on the capital issue, yeah, I understand you will be compliant by June 2016. But, you know, we've seen some of your peer banks, you know, the process that they have to go through in terms of getting approvals, sensitizing the market, the whole process takes about 1 year. So realistically, you know, what kind of, when should you be starting this process at the latest?
Let me respond to your questions one by one. Let me start with the one relating to capital. We do not have any plan to come to the market to raise capital. I think it's very important that we highlight and we reiterate that particular point. That's number one. Number two is the fact that the 5% growth in loans and advances that we are seeing is the organic, is the core growth. The impact of devaluation is... Okay, yeah. So it's a mix of both. So the impact of devaluation is not in the 5% growth. That's the organic... the expected organic growth. However, part of what we are also saying is that we expect a chunk of our current exposure to be paid down in the ordinary course of business. There's a 450 billion expected the payment during the course of the year. And what the advantage that gives to us is that we are able to rebalance our portfolio, we are able to reprice them, and we are able to channel more of our loan assets into the higher yielding segment of the market. Now, to go back to your question on OPEC, I think one thing that is very key that worthy of highlight is that we are the biggest bank, and anytime you have these regulatory headwinds, the impact on us tends to be much more severe. There's no bank today that has any the half PRR of about 560 billion, like we have highlighted, and invariably that's about 65 billion of lost revenue. So even if you take half of that and you throw it into the equation, you discover that the overall picture wouldn't be as bad as it's looking. However, we are looking forward, and we are implementing those rigorous measures that we have mentioned. At the commercial banking level, for example, we are not, I mean, at the bank level, we are not projecting any growth on our expenses into going into 2014, and that's going into 2015, and that will give you an idea of the kind of hard stance that we are, with which we are looking at the expense. We are not, at the bank level, and the bank is a significant component of the entire institution, we are not projecting any expense growth going into 2014. And that is, that tells you clearly how serious we are in terms of tackling this issue. So I hope that's helpful.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. That will conclude today's Q&A session. I would like to hand the call back to Mr. Bello Machido for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay. On behalf of all of us from SBN Holdings, we sincerely thank you for participating in this conference call. We sincerely hope that our presentation has been detailed to bring out the key issues that are important to you. And we also hope that the question and answer session has been very useful. Once again, we thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes the FBN Holdings Full Year 2014 Financial Results Call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.